Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Let's bow our head and send our strongest members to the King of Pop, the Prince of Hope, our brother, Michael Jackson.
I've been doing a lot of soul searching, and what I find interesting is the story of David. He fell in very, very significant ways, but then picked up the pieces and built from there.
I just had a conversation with Al Franken congratulating him. My wife's faith, the Catholic faith, she's there praying the rosary, and in the New Testament, Philippians, there's a section to be anxious about nothing, prayer and supplication, faith in God. I'm in the Jewish faith, and God has a plan. I believe that.
The president does say he believes marriage should be between a man and a woman, but he's opposed to the Defense of Marriage Act. He wants to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act.
A couple of special friends, Bishop Gene Robinson. Where's Gene?
Well, I don't know about you, but these things do tend to confuse me. I mean, I spent 4 years in seminary studying the Bible, and I guess with an emphasis on the New Testament, natural for a Christian. And when I read this headline, Israeli archaeologists discover ancient quarry, down in the story it talks about King Herod, the first question I ask is, well, which Herod? There's more than one Herod. There are the Herods in the New Testament. And if this is a bona fide archaeological discovery that is in some way at least tangentially related to the narrative of the New Testament, I'd like to know which Herod are we talking about and why is a quarry significant in this case? We're going to be talking about this reported discovery of King Herod's quarry. Dr. Ben Witherington will join us here in just a moment. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc., live on this Friday afternoon, July the 10th, our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. After our short conversation with Dr. Ben Witherington about the reported discovery of Herod's quarry, we'll continue our series on the end times teachings. With Dr. Kim Riddlebarger, today we'll discuss the tribulation. What does the Bible say it is, and what does the Bible say it isn't? Dr. Ben Witherington is professor of New Testament for doctoral studies at Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. He's author of more than 30 books, including The Jesus Quest, The Paul Quest, and The Lazarus Effect. Dr. Witherington, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
Which Herod is this? Can you place this reported discovery in the timeline of the New Testament narrative?
Sure. This is Herod the Great, the person who was responsible for building the so-called Second Temple in Jerusalem.
Is this quarry, is there reason to believe that this quarry was related to that construction project?
I don't see why not. I don't see any reason why not. It's the right kind of limestone, and they had to get those massive stones from somewhere, and preferably somewhere really close, since you had to haul them. So, yeah, I don't see why not.
It's kind of funny. You'd think a quarry wouldn't be something that would take a lot of trouble to discover. I mean, a quarry today is a pretty massive undertaking itself.
Well, sure, but you have to remember that the Holy Land of even Jesus' day is considerably under the ground, because not least because in the ancient times, people continued to build on top of Tell, on top of Tell, on top of Tell. So, for example, at Megiddo, you have 23 layers of civilization or more as they continued to build on the previous layers of civilization. So even to get down to Jesus' time, we have to go considerably down under the ground. If you go to the Wailing Wall today and go a little further to the outdoor archaeological exhibit there, and see the Roman street that goes by those massive Herodian stones and would have gone under the Robinson Arch, it's a good 15 feet down in the ground from street level today. So that's why it hasn't been found.
Where is it? And you said it needed to be proximate to the actual construction site for the Second Temple.
Well, I gather it's on the northwest side of Jerusalem, so that makes sense for several reasons. that side of Jerusalem, you don't have to go through major valleys to get stones into town, whereas if you're crossing either the Hinnom Valley or the Kidron Valley, you're going to have to drag them uphill and down dale. So that makes perfectly good sense. And that limestone subterranean foundation is everywhere under Jerusalem and nearby, so they could have gotten the stones from anywhere, really.
Some people, if they research Herod the Great, are going to wonder, why was this man, this notorious man, undertaking the construction of the temple?
Well, you know, that's a good question, but the answer is because Herod the Great saw himself as in the line of the great Hellenistic rulers, the Hasmoneans and others before them. And one of the things great rulers, whether they're Babylonians, Assyrians, Romans, Greeks, you name it, do is build massive buildings as tributes to their own great ability, and they're meant to be sort of showpiece political demonstrations of their power.
Is this the Herod of the Nativity stories?
Absolutely. Yeah, he had three sons. You know, we could talk about my three sons if we wanted to. But his three sons, Archelaus, who was his immediate successor in Judea, didn't last long, was pretty much a total failure as a successor to his father in Judea. That's why we end up with Pontius Pilate by the time of Jesus. Herod Antipas, he's the one who ruled Galilee, whom Jesus had dealings with and called that old fox. He was a builder like his daddy. He built two major cities. He built Caesarea. He built Tiberias and another major city near Nazareth as well. Again, in the Hellenistic style of building cities. And then there's the third son, which is Herod Philip, and he built one city called Caesarea Philippi, named after himself and Caesar. So at least two of his sons were considerable builders, but none of them undertook a project the size of Herod's temple.
This is also the temple that was destroyed in 70 A.D., I take it.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the temple since the quarry has been reported to have been found. Talk about the construction project. I take it from my reading of the New Testament, this building was still under construction at the time of Jesus and his disciples in Jerusalem.
Absolutely. It had begun to be constructed before Herod died. Herod died somewhere around 2 B.C., which of course means that Jesus was born B.C. The turn of the era was decided by Denny the Dwarf, a monk, who got it wrong. And so Jesus was born somewhere between 4 and 6 B.C. Herod died in 2 B.C. The Herodian temple was begun before the time of Jesus' birth, and it was still being built during the time of his adult ministry in 27, 28, 29, 30 A.D. And it was still being polished off in the early 60s when the Jewish War was finished. So this was a huge long-term project, and no sooner was it finished than it was destroyed in short order by the Romans at the end of the Jewish War around 70 A.D.
Do we know anything, given the fact that it's not one stone has been left on top of one another, save these foundation stones, do we know what this temple would have been like to have seen in the days of Jesus and the apostles?
Yeah, I think we have a pretty clear image of it because we have descriptions from people like Josephus, and it certainly would have been much grander than the Solomonic Temple, by far. Solomonic Temple would have looked like comparing a Prius to an Escalade SUV, you know, that there would be that much difference in size and grandeur, to say the least. And that was by design. Herod wanted, he didn't like to do anything by half measures. He wanted it magnificent or not at all. And so, we do. And the Rittmeyer family, archaeologists in Jerusalem, have drawn up really beautiful schematics of what the Herodian temple would have originally looked like, and you can also find a model of it at the Holy Land Hotel as well. So, yeah, we have a pretty clear picture of what it was like.
So, finally, Dr. Witherington, has archaeology been a friend or a foe to historic Christianity?
Well, certainly it's a friend. You know, some people are overly eager to try and, quote, prove the Bible by archaeology. And most archaeology doesn't provide a direct correlation between this verse and that claim. It provides a more general sense of the social milieu and the historical context and all of that sort of stuff. But as I like to say, a text without a context is just a pretext for whatever you want it to mean. And so archaeology helps us provide a context in which we can better understand the Bible.
Folks, we'll post a link to Dr. Ben Witherington's website under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Dr. Ben Witherington is professor of New Testament for doctoral studies at Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. He's author of more than 30 books, including The Jesus Quest, The Paul Quest, and The Lazarus Effect. Dr. Witherington, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some more time with Dr. Kim Riddlebarger, part two of our four-part series with him on end times teaching. Last time we were talking about the rapture. Now, the rapture teaching that the church is going to be caught up and taken off the earth before the tribulation is just the first part of what is the popular dispensational view of the end times. It's popular, but it's not biblical. That's not unusual in the church these days. Something is popular doesn't necessarily mean it's true. Well, what is the tribulation according to Scripture? What does Jesus mean when he talks about a great tribulation that is worse than any that ever has been, is, or ever will be, one that will be the end event? If the rapture is, in fact, the second coming of Christ, as we established last time with Dr. Kim Riddlebarger, maybe we need to rethink the timeline, at least vis-a-vis dispensationalism, when it comes to this tribulation at the end? Or does the Bible not teach a tribulation at all? When we come back, part two of our four-part daily series with Dr. Kim Riddlebarger on end times teaching, we'll talk about the Great Tribulation.
Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Concordia Publishing House has a new devotional for men titled Blessed is the Man, A Man's Journey Through the Psalms. It's a great resource for individual and group Bible study. Browse before you buy at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or purchase Blessed is the Man by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Blessed is the Man, A Man's Journey Through the Psalms, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
The leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. Stay informed. Read the new broadcast transcripts on this subject. You'll find them at the top of the on-demand page at issuesetc.org. These transcripts are a must-read for every layperson and pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. issuesetc.org. Click on demand.